You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, medalists who meditate about metadata. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 169. And of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your alliance of alluring alligators who love alliterations.
I'm joking.
Whoa. I'm like.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
Before we dive in, I would like to quickly do a real quick installment of our errors and omissions segment.
What?
Actually,
this was more kind of a follow-up. It wasn't, okay. I mean, because Karen, you on our previous episode, previously on Good Job Brain, we were discussing saltwater taffy. I really rode the roller coaster there of like, because at first I'm like, well, duh, Karen, obviously it has salt water. And then you're like, no, Colin, it does not have salt water in
it. And it was made of.
So why is it called saltwater taffy? Okay. So since the last episode, I went and dug this up. I'm like, okay, why is it called saltwater taffy? There must be some reason. Now, would you guys like to know the fanciful, likely untrue fun story?
Oh, yes.
Or would you guys like to know the real, likely true reason?
Can we have both?
Yeah, we'll do both.
Oh, okay.
Sure. Yeah. And I will be paraphrasing liberally from an article written by Matt Soniak on Mental Floss.
Okay.
So thank you to Mental Floss. And thank you, Matt. All right. So first of all, I should say it was called saltwater taffy specifically to allude to the fact that it's a seaside treat, Karen. So you were right on it with that. And specifically Atlantic City, New Jersey. So there's a story. This is the legend that in 1883, a storm hit Atlantic City.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Yes, right.
And it got
The waves.
It blew salt water into the vats.
The waves came. Not quite as. Yeah, right. You couldn't sell it. So the waves came crashing over the boardwalk, flooded a bunch of the stores along the boardwalk with seawater, including a candy shop owned by David Bradley. So then a young girl comes into the store and she's like, "Mister, you have any taffy?" And he kind of looks around and, you know, in jest is like, "All I have is saltwater taffy." So, you know, she misses the intended joke, buys some.
Little kids.
Right. And adult lets her
older, dirty candy.
Yeah.
Storm candy.
That's
so
nice,
so she, of course, loves it and shares it with her friends. Then everyone comes back asking for more of this saltwater taffy.
Right.
And a legend was born. That is probably baloney story.
Yeah.
The more likely, much more prosaic version is that it's just a marketing ploy just to kind of allude to the fact that you're by the seaside.
Right.
And to maybe... to maybe allow people to think that it's made with saltwater, seawater, without
Sounds
coming
exotic.
Right. Yeah,
sure.
It's
yeah,
like, oh, yeah, we, exactly. we better get it here yeah. because, like, you know, this
it's
is where they get all the saltwater, right? Yeah,
yeah. And it did in fact become a hit. Yeah, and you know, in the late 1800s and early 1900s, yeah, everyone started making their own version of saltwater taffy.
Yeah, because it's called it's not just called taffy; it's specifically saltwater taffy.
Yep.
I mean, I think maybe. I mean, I'm making this up. This, no truth, but I'd like to think maybe the real story is somewhere in between the two stories, where like you know they have the machines that pulls the taffy, and there's like sea breeze.
Oh, that's
and
true. Yeah,
some like. Mm-hmm.
Trace
like the beer, like the old beer,
or sourdough, or San Francisco sourdough, where like there is something native, but not
right,
you know, but trace amount,
right? But it's not,
but it's not. All right, well, thank you. That's one of my favorite candies.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Oh. Yeah.
What flavor?
Blue.
Green.
I don't know.
Green.
Is blue a flavor?
I like the cinnamon kind.
Oh, that's what kind of spicy and hot?
Yeah. Or, you know, the ones with the, like water. I love watermelon everything because usually the
watermelon
candy, they always color
sour.
It to look like watermelon.
It's whimsical.
Yeah.
Anyways. Well, thank you, Colin.
Yeah, yes. Well, thank you for bringing it up prompting me to go chase it down.
All right. Well, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot. You guys have your barnyard buzzers. Here I have a random Trivial Pursuit card picked from the box. Oh, Genus 4.
Oh, still wreck the Genus 4?
We're still Genus 4.
Solid. Uh-huh. Solid.
Yeah.
You guys have your barnyard buzzers. I have a card. Let's answer some questions. Blue Edge for people and places. What two U.S. states are home for the long-living bristlecone pine trees?
Oh. Man. No, the bristlecone pines, I was just looking at these because I saw some of them in Utah. So Utah is one of the states? No?
Chris.
Maine and New Hampshire.
Incorrect.
Dang.
California?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And in Oregon.
Yeah.
What's between Utah and California?
Nevada.
Yes.
Okay.
California and Nevada.
Maybe I was in Nevada.
Yeah, maybe it was Nevada. You were there. All right. Pink Wedge for Arts and Entertainment. What former general posted the highest score on Celebrity Jeopardy in November of 1994? Who was that? Chris.
Norman Schwarzkopf.
Yes!
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That'd be a fun list to see the highest
scoring. Oh, Celebrity Jeopardy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, Yellow Witch for history. What did De Beer Diamonds worth 5 million pounds go down with in 1912? Chris.
The Titanic.
Yes, yeah. That is correct.
Great.
Did they retrieve the diamonds? I mean, they've...
This is a very good question. Have they gone back to where the Titanic
and
sank
are they, like,
and tried
too
to
tiny?
Get all this stuff?
Yeah.
Did they get the violin? I feel like, didn't they sell a violin?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
They did.
So maybe they found the diamonds. So those diamonds can be really small, though, you know?
Yeah.
Really hard to find.
If the wood of a violin can survive that
right.
underwater, you know, a diamond can survive anything almost. All right.
Yeah.
Let's do Brown Wedge for Science and Nature. What falling fruit supposedly inspired Isaac Newton to write the laws of gravity? Everybody.
That watermelon.
Fig Newtons.
Fig Newtons. You guys are all trolls. Was calling the only person. Yeah.
I answer sarcastically. Yeah. An apple.
It is. An apple.
It's sort of true, like in that it got him thinking about gravity.
But it's not like it hit him.
No.
All right, Green Wedge for Sports and Leisure. What U.S. tennis star's father boxed for the Iranian Olympic team?
I'm going to guess it has to be Andre Agassi.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why
it has to be?
Well, because I know he's famous from Iran. So, yeah. I did not know that his... okay.
Huh. Cool.
Sporty family. All right, last question. Wild card, Orange Wedge. Who's been married to Joan, Joanne, Joanna, and Alexis?
Joan, Joanne, Joanna, and Alexis.
Oh. Hugh
Colin.
Hefner.
Incorrect.
No, this sounds like a dynasty thing.
Colin, one more time.
Is it Johnny Carson?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Joan, Joanne, Joanna, and Alexis. All right. Good job, brains. All right. This week's show is going to be cuddly. It's going to be adorable. Because this week we're talking about things that are cute.
Too cute.
Oh my god. Do you know there's a show called Too Cute?
Yes.
Yes.
The best
I've watched
show.
It. I will admit that
it's
I've
the
watched
the most
it.
Soothing thing.
Yeah.
It's
oh,
just
yeah.
like
oh, we
nothing.
Did talk about
it's
that. Like there's
sleep
no,
to that.
Just kittens, puppies, you get your baby goats in there sometimes.
Yes.
Ducklings.
Ducklings, yeah. So,
this week it's all about Too Cute.
I'm cute. Yes, it's true. What can I do when you're cute? It just shows. With these two darling eyes and this cute little nose and a pretty pink dress that's adorable. Yes, and when they see my dimples and everyone says,
oh, shoot! Isn't she cute?
Cute, cute. Oh, isn't she cute? Cute, cute.
I'm the one.
All right. Well, I'm so glad you were talking about baby animals just now. I have a quiz for you guys about baby animals. Just to make sure we're all on the same page.
Ooh.
Baby animals are amazing, amazingly cute.
Oh. Yes.
Yes. True.
True.
And then,
true.
What baby animals are called.
Yay!
And there's a lot of overlap in the name of baby animals. It's not as diverse as like groups of animals. There were so many of those. But so I will give you two or three animals and they have the same their babies are called the same thing. So that's a little bit of a hopeful hint. Maybe you know one of the animals.
Okay.
Do you think that baby animals are cute, like, on their first day?
No. They're often like hideous and scary.
Yeah.
So it takes them a little bit.
I mean, you guys know I love cats, but like a brand new newborn day one kitten, it looks like something threw up. It doesn't.
Day two though.
Yeah.
Into the cute territory. Yeah. All right, let's kick it off. Raccoons, walrus, and bear. Their babies are
cubs.
Anteater, armadillo, and bat babies. What are armadillo?
Anteater, armadillo.
Bat babies, bat babies. Pups.
Pups.
Whoa.
Yes. Nice.
Wow. Yeah. Mm.
Wait, so those bats?
Yeah.
Armadillos bats. And anteaters.
Yeah.
Anteater they're, pups.
Yeah. Anteater pups. That would be.
Bat pups.
Well, yeah. Armadillo pups. What do they look? Are they born with armor? All right, let's
yeah, it's part of their. I mean, it's you know not as hard.
They look like they look like gachapon little capsules.
Armadillos,
armadillettes,
yeah.
Armadillettes.
Oh my god, they're so cute.
They're cute.
Oh my god, they look like little pigs in little armor.
We gotta stop Karen from doing any Google image searching during this entire episode.
Every single one.
Yeah, it's gonna be derailed.
How about eel, clam, and yellow jackets?
Whoa.
They all have the same name for their babies. Yeah, I'll let Chris go. Chris.
Okay. Clamatos.
Wait. But it's the same as eel yellow jackets.
Okay. Eel,
yellow jackets.
I have a guess.
Huh. Karen, what?
Hatchling.
No.
Nymph.
No.
Yo, that's a good one, too. That's usually bugs.
Oh, yellow tadpoles.
No.
What is it?
It's larva.
Oh.
You should look at clam larva. They look like see-through clams.
Oh.
It's really interesting.
Huh. It's like special limited edition.
Yeah.
Chase clams.
Like tiny, tiny. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, like they look like boba.
They do.
Or if it were the 80s, it would be crystal clam.
Right. Ooh.
Yeah. It is crystal clam.
I kept looking at pictures of them. They're kind of pretty. There's something weird about them. Anyway. How about cockroach, grasshopper, and cicada?
Oh, I think that's...
I'm going to say nymph on this
nymph,
one.
Nymph, yeah.
Right. Okay, okay.
Nice.
Usually bugs are nymphs.
Possum, opossum, wallaby, and koala. Everybody.
Joey.
Nice. A blanket term for a lot of Australian animals.
Yeah, right.
Baby animals.
What about echidna and platypus?
Oh.
That is a puggle.
Puggles.
Get out.
What?
Yes.
Have we talked about this before?
No, but I've read up on this.
Wow.
Before.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. A puggle.
A kidnap baby echidna is so weird looking, but they're really cute.
They're really cute.
Huh.
Puggle.
Yeah.
Puggle. That's
and platypus
awesome.
Puggle.
That's a great
word. I was excited about that word too.
I can't believe that never came up on Phineas and Ferb.
Oh yeah, because of Perry.
One of the major characters is a platypus. They never came up. Puggle.
When
no.
he was a puggle. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Missed opportunity.
He was a puggle.
Right? Yeah. What about crocodiles, turtles, and dinosaurs?
I think...
Karen.
That is hatchling.
Hatchling, yeah. Yes.
Okay. So that's like egg.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Elephant, giraffe, and manatee. Karen.
Calf.
Calves. Yeah, calves.
Sea cow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean cowish, four-legged. Well, I guess...
I didn't know giraffe. I didn't know a giraffe said as well.
Huh,
I didn't know that was also a calf.
Oh, yeah. Rhymes.
Giraffe calf.
Giraffe calf.
A giraffe calf. Yeah. Oh,
a carafe.
Yes.
I get those.
Drinking a carafe.
Carafe and giraffe calf.
Carafe, giraffe calf.
Okay, two more baby categories. Muskrat, skunk, and weasel.
Oh.
Whoa. Those are specifics.
Is it a kit?
A kit, yes.
Weasel, would you say?
Muskrat.
Muskrat and skunk.
Skunk.
Mm. Kit.
Yes.
Kits.
Oh, skunk kit.
Yeah. Baby skunks are, I mean, almost
baby
every
skunks are
animal
very cute.
Is very cute. Okay. Alpaca and llama. These are the only... yeah, sorry. It's only llama. Two this time because I think they're the only two with this
name. Wow.
So, well, could we do process elimination?
Okay, yeah, no, it's a weird one. I know it's a weird one.
Oh, it's going to be like Puggle or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like...
You...
Llamaling?
Zephyr.
Llamaling.
You know what? You're not far. I like... You should just stab in the dark for it if you don't know it. Could be. No, it's a Kria. C-R-I-A.
Yes!
How's it spelled?
C-R-I-A.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That's nice. A crossword. Yeah. That's why I know. It's a crossword.
Oh,
yeah. It feels like a trivia, a pub trivia question. Yep.
Kriya. That's a good one.
Yeah. Wow. Might good need job, to know that one day.
All right.
Puggles.
Puggles.
It sounds cute.
It
you
is
know,
cute.
It's like I don't even need to look it up to know that it's cute. Yeah.
It balances
we're gonna be doing an actually. actually, they're not that cute. Yeah.
Well, it balances out the fact that they have like two penises and weird and stuff
right,
like that.
Right, yeah. Right, sure. Yeah. Yeah. It might even augment the fact that they have two penises.
Yeah. Yep.
I have a piglet.
Yes.
A baby pig.
So we heard.
Yeah. Well, you've met my pig.
I have. Yeah.
So there's a phrase, sweating like a pig.
Yeah.
Pigs all sweat.
Oh. Are they like dogs?
Yeah.
Their noses are wet.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
okay.
So they pant.
Right.
And that's why like a lot of the pigs that you see, they're like rolling in mud or rolling in water is because that's how they regulate their heat, because they can't sweat. And if it's really hot outside, then just like, that's why they like being in mud or in shady areas. And then someone on Twitter corrected me and said that the pig in Sweating Like a Pig isn't like the animal pig. It's about the pig iron.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah. It's smelting iron, smelting pig iron.
People probably think pigs sweat, because pigs have this reputation of being unclean and dirty and, you know.
Actually, here, Nita Rama explained that it specifically deals with pig iron. When pig iron is originally created from the iron ore, the smelter, the blacksmith, they need to heat the ore to, like, a super high temperature and then move the liquid metal into the mold. Until the liquid metal cools, it can't be moved because it's extremely hot. And you might burn something, right? Or you might spill and then, you know,
it's got
accidents
solidified.
Happen. So how does the smelter know when the metal is cool enough to transport? Well, when the iron starts to sweat. Because of the water content in the air. And so as the metal cools, the air around it will reach the dew point, causing droplets to form on the surface of the cooled metal. And that's
so sweating like pig iron.
Yeah, sweating like pig iron.
I like that.
Weird. I'm staring at my baby pig. I was like, why aren't you sweating? Like,
right.
Yeah. Your nose is
these
wet.
Poor pigs.
That's it.
So slandered.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Yeah. Bad
you
rat.
Don't know me.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
So I will tell you, this is a true story. I have a friend who is deathly afraid of Hello Kitty.
What?
I don't know if it was something that happened in her childhood with Hello Kitty.
Deathly afraid?
But the very afraid of Hello Kitty.
Okay.
Like the way that you are afraid of like bugs, Karen.
Okay. Oh.
She's like, that is her reaction to Hello Kitty.
Weird.
It is like, get me out of here right now.
Wow.
I do not like Hello Kitty. And so, of course, if there's like someone in a Hello Kitty costume, like whatever, like that is just terrifying to my friend. And
don't
this got me thinking, like, there we all love cute animals, but there must be people who are afraid of animals, of cute animals, of things that are not in any way to us scary.
Yeah, because there was a lady who was scared of pickles on the Maury show.
Oh, yeah. So there's people who are scared of everything.
Pickles.
Yes.
Okay.
There was a... Well, looking this up, there's actually a show called My Extreme Animal Phobia. And there is a clip. There's a guy. He is this big, shaved head, tattoos all over his body, piercings, like this big, scary, scary, hard-looking dude who is scared of dogs.
Oh.
And they bring out, I mean, Karen, you have to kind of watch this clip, because they walk out for his, like, immersion therapy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They walk out a little pit bull puppy who is the cutest dog you've ever seen. Just like, doot, 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 doot. And this guy... just he's crying. He like breaks down into tears because he's so scared of this dog. So anyway, animal phobias, it's a thing, like crippling animal phobias. And so I have a list of those wonderful whatever-o-phobia Greek words. And I'll give you some hints as to what the phobia is about.
Ooh,
you have to guess
fun.
What animal the phobia.
All right.
What's Hello Kitty phobia?
Well, you have to make it up.
Sanrio
you would have to make it up. Actually, I went ahead and did that.
Oh.
So through the magic of recklessly combining Greek words with a Latin prefix here and there, which does happen every now and again, I give you pedioastomoalerophobia, or fear of mouthless cat dolls.
Nice.
Pedioastomoalerophobia. That is what my friend has. And so, by way of example, if I were to say alerophobia, that is fear of...
I don't know.
Cats.
Alero. Alero. Wow.
Yes, aleros.
God, we're so Greek. Used to Latin, yeah. Latin base. Yes, I don't know the Greek base
right.
for
right,
cat.
Right, right,
right.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, I'll give you guys some hints and we'll see who gets to this
All
first.
Right.
Okay. Here's one that you might know right off the bat. Lepidopterophobia. Colin.
That's butterflies and moths.
Fear of butterflies, yes. Yeah. Also, you have motophobia
is fear of moths.
Oh, okay.
So lepidopterophobia very specifically. Yeah,
that I have.
Because that you got. Lepidopterophobia, yeah. Avoid flowers and cocoons because you never know what might...
Oh, I don't like them. I don't like
butterflies.
Cynophobia. That is C-Y-N-O phobia. Oh.
Swan.
Oh, you'd think.
No.
No, because cygnets. Yeah, yeah, no. Cynophobia. You would want to avoid, for example, you would want to avoid orbiting the Earth on November 3rd, 1957, because you might run into one of them. Colin.
Who was up there for a dog?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Or you just might want to avoid dog parks.
Yes.
But, you know.
Yeah. Wow.
Cynophobia.
Oops. Cynophobia. C-Y-N-O. Phobia. Okay. Fear of dogs.
Man, Greek roots.
Here's a trick question. Hippophobia.
Horses.
Yes. Yeah. Horses. Yes, yes, yes. Right. Not fear of hippos, but it is fear of horses.
Because hippopotamus is horse river.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey.
Or river horse. River horse.
River horse.
But like hippo
first. Right. Phobia. Hippophobia. Ornithophobia. Dana.
Birds.
Fear of birds. Yes, yes, yes. Ichthyophobia.
Wow.
Colin.
Fish.
Fear of fish.
Ichthyo?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you know what? Some of these, like the ologists, help because most of those are Greek. So ichthyologist, ornithologist.
Indeed. Yes. Chiroptophobia. Chiroptophobia.
Chiroptophobia.
Chiroptophobia.
Snakes.
Oh, no, not so much.
Because chiropractic. Vertebrates.
If you are a criminal and you have chiroptophobia, I would suggest you commit your crimes anywhere other than Gotham City.
Oh, bats.
Bats. Chiroptophobia. Fear of bats.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Which is, you know, totally normal. I mean, those are scary.
Yeah.
Also totally normal. Apophobia.
That's bees.
Oh, yeah. Fear of bees.
Like apiary.
Apiphobia.
Apophobia. Okay.
And one final question. So zoophobia is a generalized fear of animals.
Yeah.
What do you suppose agrizoophobia is?
Agro?
Agri. A-G-R-I. Zoo. Z-O-O. Phobia. Agrizoophobia.
Farm animals?
Not farm animals. Agrizoophobia.
Aggressive animals.
Not aggressive animals.
Old animals?
Angry animals? Agrizoophobia.
Agriculture.
I mean, it sounds like agriculture.
Yes, it is.
Growing. Baby animals.
Not baby animals.
Yeah, I mean, Dana was...
Agrizoophobia is specifically the fear of wild animals.
Oh.
So it's the opposite of farm animals.
Indeed, yeah. Yes. Yep.
Opposite of domesticated.
Yep.
Some of those are perfectly rational.
Yep.
Culture.
Agriculture being like, the sort of like, you know...
Taming the wild.
Taming nature. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I can break down, by the way, pedioastomoalerophobia. Pedio means dolls. So pediophobia is fear of dolls.
Okay.
Stomo, mouth. Astomo.
No mouth.
Yeah. And alerophobia, of course, we learned earlier, is fear of cats.
I thought you'd be like salutation.
Yeah, no, mine is funnier.
Objectively, it's objectively funnier.
Yeah, it's like, is she specifically afraid of the mouthless aspect of
the
cat doll?
Just afraid of Hello Kitty.
Cat doll. Mm-hmm. Actually, piggybacking on that. So, do you guys watch John Oliver?
Yeah.
Occasionally,
Last week.
Yes.
last week tonight. Uh-huh. Great show. I learned so much about everything watching that show.
He's awesome.
And so one of his segments just blew me away. And in Japan culture and other Asian cultures, but Japan culture mostly, there's mascots or there's characters for everything.
Yeah.
You know, sure. Everything from the train system to, you know, like Hello Kitty and
right.
Mario
it's
characters.
Very important for every like company, every police department,
yeah, it has a mascot.
Everything,
city,
every regional government. Yep, has a little
everything.
Cute mascot.
It's serious business in Japan. It's super serious business. There is even a data analysis and marketing company consulting agency called Character Data Bank. And they do consulting. They also have a lot of, analysis for some of the top character brands of the nation. Character Data Bank released their top 20 most valuable character brands.
Whoa.
So a lot of this is popularity, licensing, income of everything in Japan. This list is from 2012. They have not, I tried looking for a more recent one, but 2012 is the most recent official one that I could find. And it's interesting because what do you think number one is? What just guess.
In Japan?
Hello Kitty.
Hello Kitty.
Hello Kitty is number four. And Hello Kitty has not been number one for a while.
Interesting. Mm. Okay.
Sanrio actually has been, even though it's so popular overseas.
Oh, are they declining domestically?
Domestically, they tried to, trying to find the next it character for Sanrio, and nothing really made it to Hello Kitty. Probably the second most successful character is probably Bad Bats Maru.
Yeah, the black one.
Yeah, because
and the frog, right?
Kroupi kind of was more in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
But in terms of
like
emo.
Yeah,
well, the thing is Bad Bats Maru, because it caters to both genders. It's not necessarily only girl. It's girl and boy and little kids, and he's kind of like a bad, not a bad guy, but he's kind of like a little
a
punk
he?
Penguin. Yeah.
It's a he.
Bad Bats Maru is a
He's
an
edgy
boy.
Cute.
Yeah, he's edgy cute. But nowhere near the success of Hello Kitty. And even Sanrio themselves say that when there is a boom, people get sick of a character. And the thing is, Sanrio designers and businessmen and execs talk about how because Hello Kitty was so popular, all of their efforts weren't really focused on creating a new character.
Yeah. Right.
It
right.
was sustaining it. Most of the income is all from overseas and domestically. No one really cares about Hello Kitty in Japan.
Yeah.
Well, they care, but
not
nearly as much as they had in the past.
Yeah, exactly.
Is Pikachu on there?
Yeah, Pokemon.
So, I have a bunch of questions. Some of these franchises, of course, you know, no one in America would know. So, out of the top 20, four of these top characters are Disney. Really?
Oh,
okay.
Can you guys work together and maybe name a couple?
Sure.
Stitch is ridiculously popular.
It
in Japan.
Is ridiculously popular, but it's not in the top 20.
It's not in the top 20. Okay.
Mickey Mouse.
Minnie Mouse.
Yeah. Donald Duck.
Nope.
Donald Duck's big in Sweden randomly.
Yeah.
Okay. Mickey Mouse. Minnie Mouse.
Mickey Minnie.
A franchise and another character.
Oh,
a franchise.
Yeah. Like a movie. Let's just say a movie.
Oh, okay.
A character
Frozen?
From a movie. No.
I guess 2012. Yeah.
It's not
Duffy the Disney Bear, is it?
No. But that's also very popular.
Yeah. Orange Bird.
No. So, Mickey Mouse is number three.
Uh-huh.
Winnie the Pooh is number eight.
Of course. Yeah, right. Huge.
Very,
Pusan.
And then Pusan.
Pusan.
Yeah. Number 14, Minnie Piglet. Mouse. Number 19, Cars.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
I'm surprised that Cars is more valuable than Stitch, honestly.
Funny thing about Stitch. So Lilo and Stitch, set in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Stitch, somehow that character is, I mean, it's very cute and it just captured the hearts of a lot of, Japanese kids. So there's a Lilo and Stitch show in the US, which is like an animated cartoon.
Uh-huh.
There is a Japanese version of it and they replaced Lilo. With Yuna, with a little girl called Yuna, and instead of having it set in Hawaii, it's set in Okinawa.
What?
And
I didn't even know that.
And the looks of it is more anime than it is Disney.
Really, that's interesting.
But like the Stitch is still the same.
Stitch
looks the same. Yeah, very interesting.
Huh.
Produced and animated in Japan.
I never liked Stitch. From a character design, I always felt like they were trying too hard to make a cute character.
It was a koala. A blue koala.
Yeah, it was a blue koala. Yeah. Right, right.
And it worked.
Yeah, P.S. They don't care what I think.
Yeah.
They got this under control color.
Yeah.
Okay. And of this top 20, two are of Nintendo. Mm-hmm.
Two are...
Probably Mario and Pikachu.
I was gonna say, oh yeah.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say. Also, we should consider Yoshi in there as well.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, I think that's the safest. Like,
yeah.
Mario and
Super Mario Brothers.
Uh-huh.
And Pokemon.
Pokemon. Yeah.
Pokemon is number two.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it makes you think, what is number one?
I think I have a stab at it.
Okay.
If it's not Hello Kitty, it's not Sanrio, it's it's not Pokemon. I'm gonna guess.
Okay.
I guess that it is Snoopy.
Snoopy is number 10.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
It's not Snoopy.
Snoopy, parentheses, peanuts.
Where is the Colonel from Kentucky Sand?
Is number one a worldwide, or is it Japan
only? It's Japan only, but you might have seen a cast of these characters. It's Anpanman.
Oh, wow.
He's a superhero whose head is a bread.
Filled with red bean heads.
Yeah, and his friends are also superheroes with bread heads, different breads. So there's like a melon bread.
Yeah.
And there's like a curry bread.
That's very interesting to find out how, like, just how big some of these characters are.
And like it to scale. So in Anpanman is not even Sanrio. And one of the problems that people have stated about Sanrio's decline is it takes them so long to come up and test with a character and then do the product and marketing. Mm. And little companies, smaller companies, they have more flexibility to create more characters and introduce them in stickers or whatever.
Sure.
And one of the, what used to be a small known stationery company called SanX, nothing to do with Sanrio, it's called SanX. They had so much success with growing up. I knew Tara Panda, which is like a mochi panda that's just very like
yeah.
a mochi, like it's made of mochi.
It has
like a dumpling panda.
Yeah, it has a kind of like a
Dana's
soggy,
really trying to drill down.
He has a droopy kind of
droopy, saggy.
Like drawing
like
they have you seen Kogepan, like the burnt piece of bread?
Yes.
Who's sad because
who's
he's
really
burnt?
Sad.
Yeah.
He has hollow eyes.
Yeah.
He has hollow orphan Annie eyes. And also from San X, what was popular was Afro Ken growing up. It was a little dog with an afro.
With a rainbow afro.
Yeah. And that was like
I've seen
super
that.
Popular.
Okay. I think we've seen that.
We have a little cooler, and the mascot is Beerchan, which I think might even be from San X. It's a cute little mug of beer.
Aww.
Oh, cute
Beerchan.
Yeah,
I just want to drink him up.
So one of San X's most popular is Rilakkuma, which is a little bear.
Yeah,
and you see once you see it, you're like, oh, I've seen this bear before,
like Rilakkuma.
Rilakkuma.
Relaxes. Rilakkuma.
Oh, okay. So he's a relaxed bear? Kuma's bear.
Kuma's bear and relax bear. Rilakkuma.
He's a relaxed bear.
Of course, we probably all know that the word to describe cute, in the Japanese cute way, you would describe something as cute is...
Kawaii.
Kawaii. What does kawaii mean?
What does kawaii mean?
If you spell it, it's K-A-W-A-I-I.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because E. And when you break it down literally, it means able to love or something that is so lovable.
It's a good way to describe something cute.
But that's cute. That's
like adorable.
Oh, yeah. Do you have Beerchan up?
I do have Beerchan.
Maybe I saw it at your house.
Oh.
Somewhere. Yeah.
Oh, and his hair is like little beer suds.
Right. He's holding his little mug of beer.
Everything is cute. One of Hello Kitty's problem is that for a lot of these characters, they can vault into TV shows or, you know, like Pokemon had a TV show and Hello Kitty doesn't have a mouth. Mm. And that brand, brand Bible is so strict on Hello Kitty never having a mouth that you couldn't really have a TV show or have the cat talk.
It could all be internal monologue, you
which
know?
Is weird.
Yeah.
And that's one of the problems with Hello Kitty.
Yeah.
Do you remember Monchichi?
Yeah.
It was like around the same early 80s, right?
There was Deary Lou.
Yeah.
Cinnamon roll.
I've never, Anpanman.
Anpanman.
What does that literally translate to?
That means bean bread man.
Bean bread man.
Yeah.
Great.
Anpan is a very traditional, just bean bread.
Anpanman. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
All right, let's take a quick break. A word from our sponsors.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Good Job Brain. Smooth puzzles, smart trivia. Good Job Brain.
And Colin, you got one last cute related segment.
I do.
I hope it's cute.
Oh, it's cute. In fact, it's about the science of cuteness.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, Chris, your baby son is in the adjoining room while we record here. Yeah. And he is. I'm going to go ahead and say it, cause so you don't have to sound like you're bragging, but he is cute.
He's very cute.
Your son is super cute.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah. This just in. Yeah. Babies in general are cute.
Yeah.
But Chris's son is
a lot.
He's on the
list. Yeah.
And, you know, while you were holding your son earlier today, you know, you made a comment that I think a lot of new parents realize, you know, shortly after having, you know, babies, which is that, you know, and I'm paraphrasing you here, but I think you'll agree, babies are trying to kill themselves hundreds of times a day.
Absolutely.
So what does that have to do with cuteness? Mm-hmm. What was babies having to kill themselves, trying to kill themselves hundreds of times a day after cuteness? So let me start. I want to tell you guys a little bit about Konrad Lorenz, all right? Konrad Lorenz. He was a Nobel Prize-winning Austrian zoologist and ethologist. Do you guys know what ethology is? ETH, ethology.
Ethics?
It sounds like it. You might think so. Ethology is the study of animal behavior.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And broadly, human behavior from a biological perspective. You know, looking at why do we do the things we do, being that we are animals. And in the late 1940s, Konrad Lorenz developed the concept of the Kinderschema.
Baby schema.
Okay.
Okay.
And what the baby schema was is essentially a scientific description of what generations of grandmas and Disney animators already instinctively know, which is that there are certain characteristics that are just inherently, undeniably cute.
Yeah.
We look at babies and we're like, babies are cute. We look at puppies and things like that. We're like, they're cute, but okay. And
he was
trying to really quantify what is cute. And for a couple reasons. And this is not like a silly kind of scientific lark. He really went through, codified, this is what makes babies cute. Mm. The baby schema. I will list several of these things here. A large head.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Big head relative to body size. Yep. Right. A rounded head in particular.
Oh,
always
cute. Yep.
Not the spiky ones.
A large protruding forehead. Big eyes.
Yeah.
This one's key. Big eyes relative to the face. And this one is very subtle, especially when the eyes are below the midline of the head. So this kind of
when they're towards the bottom half of the face,
thus exaggerating the size of the forehead.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Rounded cheeks, kind of big puffy baby cheeks. Mm-hmm. Yep, little fat cheeks. Sort of an overall sort of soft body shape, elasticized shape. And even sort
not
of
like those ripped babies.
Not cute.
And his theory was not just that these characteristics are what make babies cute, right? And not just baby, you know, humans, by the way. I mean, if you look at kittens and puppies and baby gorillas, and they also share these characteristics. So, okay, so why is that? Why do baby humans and baby animals look cute? So his belief was that it's to create an intrinsic – need for adults to take care of babies. Yes. You know, because, I mean, especially humans. Human infants are helpless for so long.
Yeah. A real long time.
Real long time.
Real long, right?
Real
Chris?
Long. Yeah. Till college.
Yeah.
The studies show that exposure to cute things, to babies in particular, creates a real chemical response in the pleasure section of your brain.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of other things, like good meals or sex or any other sort of high pleasure activity in humans that nature kind of wants to reward. And as I say, this extends to other animals for the same reason that, you know, that they are hardwired to look after the young of a species so that maybe the parents aren't around. Maybe something, God forbid, happens to the parents that other humans are going to pick up the slack.
Right.
And you just, I can't help it. I want to take care of this. And there are some, you know, reasons why some of these things happen. You know, human brains are big, so human baby heads are extra big. The cartilage in babies' noses is really soft, and so that's why they get the little tiny baby nose. Did you guys know babies' eyes are virtually the same size that they are as human adults, right?
Yeah, well. I kind of figured.
So you got to imagine you've got these giant eyes on a tiny little face.
Right.
So we're hardwired to recognize these as young animal features. And as I say, you know, as I Disney knows this as well, this is why so many Disney characters have the big eyes. They're on the front. You know, it's like animals that normally have their eyes on the side of their head, like mice, for instance, are moved to the front so they can be a lot cuter, you know? Like, if you had a little cartoon mouse with realistic eyes, it's just not cute.
Or realistic head shape.
Right. That there are definite lists.
This guy won a Nobel Prize for this?
He didn't win a Nobel Prize directly for this research, but he is legendary for establishing the idea of, as I say, the baby schema, that this is something, it's not just anecdotal, like, you know, I find babies cute too.
Yeah,
you know, we are built to find babies cute. Yep, and animals as well. All right, so here's where it gets really interesting. Have you guys ever heard someone say, "You're so cute, I could just eat you up"?
Yeah.
All right.
Sure.
And you guys, or the trope of the over affectionate aunt who just pinches your cheeks so hard, and
you're like, stop it.
My wife, like when she sees babies, you know, we're out, she's like, "Oh, I just want to squish them. I just want to crush them up."
This is a thing.
This is a thing.
Yes.
This is a real, documented biological phenomenon.
Yep.
This is not, again, just some random anecdotal thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because I do this to the baby. It's like people do this and you don't really realize you're going to do it, but then you have a baby and you're just like,
yeah,
that's so weird.
Yeah.
So researchers have dubbed this cute aggression. This is, I think, the perfect term for it. Research out of Yale University. So how do you document that this is a real thing? All right. So they
put 100 grandmas and 100 babies in the same room.
So the theory is that the exposure to cuteness creates this aggressive instinct somehow, right? Mm-hmm. So what they did is they would conduct an experiment where they take a group of people and you show them three different kinds of slideshows, right? You show them some neutral slideshows, you know. You show them cute photos, and then you show them funny photos. And each participant is also handed a sheet of bubble wrap. And they are told they can pop as many bubbles as they want, and you're going to watch the slideshow. The group that watches the cute slideshow pops more bubbles. It is they cannot channel the aggression in any other way compared to the neutral or the funny slideshow.
Okay, now I get it. At first I was like, I don't know what you mean by but like sometimes when I do like a Google image search for baby, I'm like, I can't stand. Like,
yeah.
I can't. Yeah. Describe it, but I'm overwhelmed.
You are experiencing.
So
that's what this is. You're like, I just can't. Yeah. I gotta do something with it.
Does it ever make you dizzy? Like I start feeling like I'm swooning. When I look at cute.
Yeah, like I can't handle it.
It's too cute.
Rebecca Dyer, one of the researchers at Yale University, says we think it's. She says it's almost a sense of lost control. It's so adorable. It drives you crazy. So talking about I could just want to eat you up. I just want to just bite you. Other studies have shown that exposing mothers and women as in general to the baby smell,
yes,
is enough to trigger the cute aggression reaction. Is enough to trigger the oh, I just want to just I can't control it. So why is this? Like what could possibly explain why we want to do this?
Why we go crazy?
Why and like a lot of other things in our brain and our bodies, they don't exactly know. You know, we don't come with an instruction manual. There's a couple theories. One theory is that the cute aggression is your body's way, your brain's way of balancing out the extreme attraction and affection you feel towards something cute. It's almost like your brain gets so overloaded that it kind of has to like bring you back into balance with something that cancels out wanting to just love it and adore it. The study does show that people who have strong cute reactions, like really attracted to cute babies, animals, are the ones who tend to have the strongest aggressive need to get it out when they are like exposed to that stimuli later. And I mean, like Karen, like we see you, like we're walking down the street, we pass like a little puppy or something. Karen's like, oh my God. The other idea is that maybe it's just your wires getting crossed. You know, the fact that the pleasure center of the brain is connected with so many other things, like it could literally be it's stimulating the part of your brain that wants to eat and you makes you think you want to eat the baby. Luckily, luckily our higher reasoning processes
like,
step
no,
in.
That's crazy. Yeah. Don't do that. Yeah.
Yes, and we don't actually eat or crush or nibble the babies.
When you eat the baby, yeah.
Yeah, social biting, you know, is a characteristic that you'll see among like puppies or kittens playing together. And they will only do it with friendly animals. You know what I mean? Just like the little soft love nibbles, love bites. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are all biologically grounded things, even if we can't quite explain why it is. So the next time you talk about like something being that's just objectively cute, you are right. Something can be objectively cute.
Now,
to all you parents out there, I have to tell you something that may make you feel guilty. Studies have shown cuter babies will elicit a faster reaction response time from parents if they're shifting tasks.
What do you mean?
Meaning that if you give a parent a task to do something and you see like baby starts crying. Right? The cuter the baby is, the faster the parent will switch tasks and go attend to the baby.
Oh, yeah.
We're just wired to
well,
for this.
Well, what if you don't see the – you're not looking at the baby.
Assuming you're looking.
Yeah, okay. Right, yeah, right.
But then you have to like – well, what do they have to do? Get 100 babies and rate them by how cute they are?
Yeah. This is science,
remember,
Karen. This is how it works. Yeah. Yeah.
We've now quantified
it's
cuteness,
like,
so you can do that.
This baby has a short forehead.
Size of eyeballs, forehead, roundness of cheeks.
Yeah.
Floppiness of body.
And, you know, it's funny, like, the researchers and people who...
Buff baby.
The super buff baby.
Nobody responds to that.
The writers and researchers who are into this, the baby schema and cute aggression, things like that, you know, they note that, like, a lot of... In the early years of Disney Studios and other animation studios, you know, the guides, you know, distributed how to draw cute characters, they'll describe these same rules that they came up with, I mean, on their own, before,
Conrad Lawrence... They did not know. They thought it was just sort of subjective. They did not realize that there was actually a biological imperative going on there.
But they did have a system. I mean, they did.
And this is why, as you say, Dana, it's like it's so easy for us to transfer to other things. Like you just, you know, you draw just like a little face on something that's kind of round and soft and cute, and you instantly want to just embrace it. It's also why sort of in general, like even if they're not grown up, we tend to find round, soft animals cuter than kind of hard, rigid, you know, animals. Like even, you know, manatees are kind of cute in their own way.
Yeah. You just want to hug them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But don't worry, parents. Studies have also shown that your little baby is
the
cutest baby.
Yeah. But your baby is cute. Your baby
we will occasionally like have people walk by and just sort of have that initial reaction just to say, like, even before they see him, like, oh, what a cute baby. We actually had somebody at one point who was just like, oh, what a cute... Whoa, that is a cute baby.
Yeah, he has all the right proportions.
We also took him... Yeah, we took him to Tokyo Disneyland, and that was just like...
Kawaii
women overload. Women in their 20s just losing their minds every time they see him. And it's like... they just melt.
All right, and that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me. Thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about baby animal names, and then the fear of animals. I guess Japanese characters and the science of cuteness. You can find our show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, on Spotify, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Neil.
And I'm Ken.
And we are from the Triviality Podcast, a pub trivia-style game show where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Join us each week for an hour-long game of general knowledge trivia featuring special guests from around the world, plus tons of extra themed episodes.
If you want to improve your trivia game,
or you just want to scream at us in your car when we get easy questions wrong,
then we're the show for you. Find Triviality on all your favorite podcast apps.
But you know that, because you're already listening to a podcast.